You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jay. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We hope you're having fun. We're the Raina Jays. John Corrales of MassLive.com, joined by Jay King of The Athletic. Jay King, are you having fun?
I'm here to have fun, baby.
So we've been having fun, but the Celtics are not. At least Marcus Morris isn't. We're going to talk about that. We'll get into a little bit of Kyrie Irving's injury and kind of where things stand. This is basically the Mook podcast. It's supposed to be our taco podcast, but there's no possible way we can hand out tacos after blowing massive leads to the Lakers and the Clippers. There's just no tacos to be had. Except
no tacos. Tacos for no one. Zero tacos. Nobody eats. Nobody has fun.
Unless you want to give one taco to Marcus Morris.
Yeah, I do want to give one taco to Marcus Morris for giving us a topic to podcast about.
Yeah, it was just funny because after losses, everybody's giving the same answers, the same thing. Try to tell us that, oh, we're just going to go watch film. Like, you've been watching film. Like, come on, talk to us. And then Marcus Morris comes out and it's like, once he said, he was asked, what was your reaction to what happened tonight? And he said, something about the other team, you know, being a better team. And he said, emphasis on the word team. I was like, uh-oh, here we go.
Yep, that was, I kind of knew it when he was muttering to himself on the way over to the assembled media. That was when I thought, yeah, Mook may go off tonight.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I mean, those were as cutting as you get for post game comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much.
That was just lighting a fire to the entire team spirit, to the entire. When he said, you know, it's not about one loss, it's not about two losses, it's about the entire experience. Like, he has just had a sour experience. The entire experience has been sour to him. And obviously, it's been. We've known all along it's been a trying season, but for one of the Celtics' key players and one of their veterans to come out and say this hasn't been fun and that he sees everyone else and they look like a team and they look like they're enjoying it and he looks at the Celtics and they're a bunch of individuals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, damn.
Yep. So there's two things that really stick out. The bunch of individuals and the guys are hanging their heads. And so those two things, to me, just tell me what, as much as anything he said, like everything else that he said was just kind of amplifying the message. So let's start with a bunch of individuals. Now, you can start to guess from the top, who's he talking about here? Is he talking about Kyrie? No, nobody's talking about Kyrie here because Kyrie, whenever he does something individual, is like, that's just Kyrie being Kyrie. So he can't be talking about Kyrie. He's not talking about Gordon Hayward because no one's passed more than Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward, maybe he's one of the guys that's hanging his head, but I don't think so. I think that he's not talking about him. He's not talking about Al Horford. That's for damn sure. Who else could he be talking about? He's not talking about Marcus Smart.
I honestly, and this to me was the difference between Morris's and Kyrie's comments. Kyrie specifically called out a single group of players in the young players.
Yeah.
I don't think Morris meant to call out anyone individual. I think he really wants this team to become more than they are, to become better than they are. And maybe there are a few players he was thinking of, but I think it was more just like, we need to grow together. Yeah. And I honestly don't think he was trying to divide the team. It seemed like after 55 games of, and then they've been good. And that's the thing. That's what's so weird about this drama. Like, if the Celtics just liked each other, then they'd be able to realize they've been playing really well ever since Marcus Smart got inserted into the starting lineup. They've still, after blowing 20-plus point leads to each of the LA teams in the last two games, they've still won 10 of their last 13. Like, they all, every indicator on the basketball court suggests this team should be feeling pretty well about itself. Obviously, the two losses were terrible. They deserved all the boost. But the drama is a window into the sense that this group just doesn't feel like it has maximized itself and doesn't feel comfortable with where they are and doesn't feel comfortable with how they're going about things. And that's what's weird to me, is like, they should be feeling pretty well about themselves and they're just not. And that's what's bizarre to me about this whole season. It's been bizarre from the start. Like, we can go back to every blow up they've had. The team meeting that came shortly after an 8-game winning streak. The 3-game road trip where they had Marcus Morris shoving Jalen and Kyrie flipping out on Gordon Hayward and Kyrie blasting the young guys. That was right after they had played some, you know, I think they had the 5-game 30-plus assist streak, which was the longest since Larry Bird was in town. And then these last two games, like, they had won 10 of their last 11 games. They have two really bad losses, and Marcus Morris, like, this has not been fun at all. So it's obvious that this is deeper than basketball. And that's what's kind of funky about it, is that it isn't just about basketball. It's about this team not enjoying itself and not feeling like it's together. And obviously 55 games into a season, and with the rest of the Eastern Conference bolstering up, and with the 76ers looking with Tobias Harris like a juggernaut, that's alarming as hell.
Let's really try to piece all of this together, though. So it's kind of, there's so many different things that are happening. So Marcus Morris, another thing that he talked about was sacrificing, and people aren't sacrificing. Like, we can say he's trying to talk to everybody, but like, it's pretty obvious here that he can only be talking about a few people. Like, this isn't an everybody thing. Like, Daniel Tice isn't involved in all of this. You know what I'm saying? So this isn't a team, and I don't think this is a team that hates each other. I think this is a team that, I don't know, like each other, not like each other. They seem to get along fine. But the whole message of, from the beginning of the year, the lack of sacrifice, the young guys going after their own thing, starts with, it's three guys. It's the same three guys. It's Terry Rozier, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. It's a Terry Rozier who could have gotten a gigantic payday had he been a free agent 1 year earlier. Okay, that's tough. It's very difficult to handle, and he's got to go out there and try and figure out how to navigate this season, and he knows he's going to be leaving unless something crazy happens with Kyrie. But he's one of the guys that has been talked about, whether by name or not. He's one of the guys. He's got ulterior motives. He wants to win, but dude's like, what, 25? And he's going out to get a big contract. He's got millions of dollars that he's trying to go get. So he's got another thing going. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum are two guys that are budding young stars. They've got accolades that they want to get. They got endorsements that they want to get. They got products that they want to sell. They've got their own. They got to grow into their own people. Jaylen Brown, definitely one of the culprits, because he said when he went to the bench, I get to be more comfortable being me, being who I can be, knowing who I can be, all of that type of stuff. So he needs to be who he can be. He's not a guy like Ray Allen. When Doc Rivers was talking before the game yesterday, that Ray Allen sacrificed the most. Jaylen Brown's not going to sacrifice that. Jaylen Brown would rather go to the bench and be who he is, because he's a young guy. And
to be fair, going to the bench is a sacrifice.
Well, I mean, it
playing
is.
Playing fewer minutes is a sacrifice, and he hasn't complained once.
He hasn't. He hasn't. And as I was about to say here, this all sounds negative. I know it sounds negative, but it's not negative necessarily. This is the reality of the situation. Like, this is how basketball goes, and this is how NBA basketball goes. And we have to be careful as observers, as fans, as people who cover the team. NBA basketball is such a different animal than everything else. You can't just sit there and say, well, bench this guy or do this or do that, because that's how they would do it when I was in high school. Well, this is the pros, and there's money involved, and there are a lot of outside forces involved. So it's negative in a way that it has a tough impact on the team. But that's every 20, 21, 22-year-old, they go through this. This is part of growing up in the NBA. Jason Tatum, same thing. He goes off in the summer and has his Kobe moment, and he wants to come out and be a star, and he's like super crazy ISO, and he has his moments. There was a play that I highlighted in last night's game against the Clippers where Gordon Hayward, I forget who, I think Tatum was posting up like Pat Beverly or something, and Gordon Hayward cut and was wide open under the basket. And then he had sealed this guy off, and Tatum either didn't recognize, saw it, and didn't care to pass because he was just going to go shoot anyway. But that was an easy, wide-open pass. Those types of plays, and I'm sure that's one of the types of plays that these guys talk about when you talk about individuals. All of these forces are in play here, and it's hard. It's hard for young stars to sit there and be like, sacrifice what? What do I got to sacrifice? I got to go out and do what I got to do. And it's hard for an older guy, especially like Marcus Morris. I mean, he's a free agent. He's going to try and go get his money. But it's hard. It's easier for an older guy to sacrifice and say, look, I get it. I can go to the bench. I can do this. I can do that. And I need everybody else to do this. But the younger guys, they have these other things in their heads. That's just how it is. That's the tough part about this team, about any team that's got these young guys that are budding stars. So what does all of that I just said mean? That it's tough, that I don't know how easy it's going to be for these guys to magically get past any of this, other than to say maybe when the playoffs roll around and the regular season, go get yours type of mentality, especially when they're down like 30 or when they're up 30. Like, why are they blowing these big leads? They're up 30. That's a time for Terry Rozier and these other guys to be like, all right, now I can go freelance and do my thing. And it's all right, because we're up 30. Like, that's fine if I go do whatever and kind of break whatever we're trying to do. I'm just going to go get some buckets, because I need to make my numbers look good. But when the playoffs roll around and you're always playing these good teams and you just put all that other stuff aside and say, okay, if we don't win, then we're screwed. And if we lose, then I look really bad. Maybe that's the type of thing that'll kick them in the ass.
Are you done?
I am.
I thought you were still going. Let's go to break and then we'll continue talking about it.
Celtics need the kind of teamwork that we have here on the Lockdown Celtics podcast. Jay, recognizing time and situation, threw to the break. While I was off on my selfish rant, Jay...
KYP, baby, know your personnel.
Sorry. So I went off on a thing. Go ahead, Jay. You have
so
your response.
I don't think it's fair to put it all on the young guys. I don't think it's at all fair. I think every dynamic about this team, not every dynamic, but so many dynamics about this team made things difficult from the start. You've got the very rare circumstance where several guys who were in starring roles or close to it during the playoffs last year are now asked to squeeze back into smaller roles. And those guys are young guys who want more, like you were suggesting. Then you've got Gordon Hayward coming back, and the general public expects him to come back and be a star, an all-star, and he's not close to that. And it's been now 55 games, and he's started 20 games, even though the starting lineup with him in it was bad. He has been like, it's been a really tough year for him. He's progressed. He's got every excuse in the book. This isn't on him, but it's just another dynamic. And like, to me, the end of the Lakers game, the Lakers have come all the way back. They have, you know, taken the lead or come close. And Gordon Hayward's on the court in crunch time. Jaylen Brown had a hell of a game. Terry Rozier had a hell of a game. If I'm one of those guys, I'm sitting on the bench like, why? Especially if Jaylen, why? I've had a better year than Gordon. I've had a better game than Gordon. Why is he on the court in crunch time and I'm not? And so I get that. And I get Gordon Hayward's good. I get why Brad wants him on the court. But there are so many dynamics at play. And then on top of everything, you've got Kyrie now opening the door to his departure in free agency. And you've got that. And then you've got the Anthony Davis pursuit, where Jason Tatum has been discussed by everyone as a possible piece heading to New Orleans in the offseason. And Jaylen Brown has heard his name in that. And Marcus Smart has heard his name in that. Even Al Horford has heard his name in that. There are so many dynamics at play with this particular team that it's like, wow, there's just a lot going on. And from the start of the season, you could see that approaching as a possibility. I didn't know Gordon Hayward was going to take as long as he has to round into shape. And I didn't know the extent to which the shrinking roles would impact some of the young guys and therefore impact the entire team. But it's clearly had a huge effect. And all of it's clearly had a huge effect. And to top it all off, there's now a pressure with Marcus Morris saying he doesn't have fun. Well, what if Kyrie's not having fun? And what if Kyrie doesn't love the culture that drew him to verbally commit to Boston in the first place? And what if, because of that, he decides to leave at the end of the season, no matter what happens in the playoffs? Because there's that possibility. He went to the finals in his last year in Cleveland, and he wasn't enjoying himself. And because of that, he left. And you can say there was a LeBron dynamic. You can say there was all sorts of dynamics going on in Cleveland, because there was. But what it boiled down to was that he thought he would have a better experience elsewhere. And if the Celtics are having such a tough time enjoying themselves this year, if Kyrie is having a similarly rough experience to Marcus Morris, how does that impact his decision in the future? And that's the other layer to this, is that the Celtics have a lot of pressure to give guys that joyful experience. And this has just been a tough year on a lot of players so far.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that you said it's not fair to put it on the young players, yet you put a lot of it on the young players, because
it's not
negative, Jay. I bust your balls a little bit there, but we got to understand, like, people have to understand, like I said before, this is not saying this because it's negative and these guys, like, we're shaking our fingers and tisk tisk these guys. This is the real dynamic. Like, I get it too. Jaylen Brown sitting there like, why is Gordon Hayward in the game right now when I've been playing extraordinarily well? Why is Gordon in there?
And the other person who deserves some blame at least is Brad.
Like, okay, let's talk about that. Let's get into that, because we need to really flesh out how much of this really is on Brad.
And so, I have no idea how much exactly is on Brad, how much of it is.
But let's talk about it, because it's rarely discussed that Brad Stevens, how much at fault he is. And I haven't really put much of the blame on him, because I think I understand why he does some of these things. Like, you have to play Gordon Hayward in these situations. And I think
why?
Because that's the only chance you have of getting him to be the Gordon Hayward that he was.
Is it? If he was just a regular player, if Gordon Hayward was just a regular player, Brad would have him progressing in drills, and he wouldn't have him in crunch time in a game where Jaylen played. I'm saying, though, like, there are other ways. It's not just you only learn in crunch time against LeBron James.
No.
That's not how it goes. And I'm not even pinning that loss on Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward, he was one of their best players against the Clippers. Probably their best player against the Clippers, the only one who wasn't puking all over himself. But I don't think you have to give him those minutes either.
I think you, in that particular game, in that one game, we can discuss whether maybe he should or shouldn't have gotten those minutes.
And I was only talking about that one game.
Okay. In that one game, I think Gordon Hayward played well too. And I think that was, if you're going by Jaylen Brown saying, I should have been in there because, you know, of what I've been doing this past month. Like, he was having a good game too, but he was also in the second quarter playing some pretty, pretty shitty defense. Like, he had some really, really, really bad mistakes defensively. So if you want to ask specifically about that game, why he was on the bench, not in crunch time, it's probably because in the second and third quarter, he had some very terrible defensive lapses. And that's what I would point to in that, like, in some that he knew right away that were bad defensive lapses. Overall, I've been pro playing Gordon Hayward even through his struggles. And I think we're starting to see it pay off because he has to play that 5-on-5. Like, I'm not going to go into the full repetition of everything I've been saying on the podcast, but he missed the entire summer of 5-on-5. So this playing his way through the season, starting 5-on-5 basically right before the season starts, like, that's pretty terrible place for him to be in his rehab. And playing him and getting him to this point is supremely important because at his best, if he is to reach his or regain what he had before, that's better than Jaylen Brown. And the Celtics need Gordon Hayward, their $30 million a year guy, to reach that level or get close to that level. The only way to do it is to play him those minutes. And he's already gone to the bench. So that's part of, we talk about the sacrifice and all that. Like, he understood, I got to go to the bench, I got to play my minutes somewhere else. And I think we're starting to see some of the benefits. Like, lastly, he tried to dunk on Montrezl Harrell. Like, he tried to posterize somebody. That's a huge step for him. He's never had the confidence all season long to try something like that. So I think we're starting to see some of the patience with Gordon Hayward pay off. Now, has that been a bone of contention throughout the season? I've seen rumblings throughout the media reporting that that's been the case. I think if Gordon Hayward starts to progress and take more steps forward and become a better player, then we'll be able to say, hey, whomever was bothered by Gordon Hayward getting the minutes, this is why he got the minutes. And if you were bothered by it, you got to check yourself and understand that he's not in a situation where it's like, we signed a guy and he didn't live up to the expectations. We signed a guy, he snapped his leg, and this is part of his rehab, and this is just a unique situation. So if that's okay. If that's part of the dynamic, then I don't think it should be.
Okay. Well, the first mistake I think Brad made this year has nothing to do with basketball. He set expectations way too high for Gordon Hayward. As far back as the preseason, before the preseason, before training camp, Brad was saying Gordon looks like himself.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon is playing like himself. And as soon as we saw Gordon Hayward play basketball, we knew it wasn't even close to that. And I don't know whether he was trying to instill confidence in Gordon Hayward. I don't know what the plan was, but I think by sending that message in the press, that created a dynamic where Gordon Hayward, by not being himself right away and by still not being himself 55 games later, he's taken more heat than he should. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a thing. He had a devastating injury, a just awful injury. And you look at Paul George is still regaining strength years later. I know they weren't exactly the same injuries, but similar. And if they had set expectations lower for Gordon Hayward from the start, I think that would have been better for everyone involved, because then the expectations on Gordon wouldn't have been so high. And then the expectations on the team may not have been so high. And that's another wrinkle to this, is that the expectations for this team were so high,
mm-hmm,
that they were going to win the East and maybe be the runaway favorites in the East. And that has contributed to everything too, because once they started 10-10, that's when the rumbling started. And, you know, now they're in fifth place. And even though they've been playing very well for a long time, the lingering disappointment of that start has never left them. And so to me, like, that was Brad's first mistake. And I think it was an organizational mistake. I think everybody kind of tried to talk up Gordon Hayward instead of just telling the truth. And I think the truth would have been better for everyone involved, honestly. If everyone had said Gordon Hayward still has a ways to go, he's going to play and he's going to round into shape, and we're going to be patient with him, and it's going to end up working great, because by the time the playoffs roll around, or whatever the case may be, he's going to get better and better. I think that would have been for the best for everyone involved.
Well, yeah, expectations were high. I guess as far as the Brad Stevens setting the expectations on Gordon Hayward, I think that's a fair point. I don't know why he did that. I really have kind of forgotten about that. I think that once we saw what Gordon Hayward was, like, it was obvious who he was and what he was. But I think Brad Stevens he's never going to say anything bad about Gordon Hayward. As far as the team expectations go,
he has nothing to do with that.
He has nothing to do with that. That's hard. I just think, and they said it, like Jason Tatum said it, we bought into our own hype a little bit. Like, I think there was definitely some of that. And again, it does fall more on the young guys, because they don't have the experience. A lot of it is you just don't have the experience. And it just, like, Kyrie might not have made the point correctly, but he might have made it a little too pointedly and might have said it a little too much, but he was making good points to me that these guys just don't have the experience they need. And when you don't have the experience and when you're on a team like this.
But they went to the Eastern Conference Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals without him.
Yeah, but Jay, that's fine. But that's still, they don't have that same kind of level of, like, that same depth of the full NBA experience. Like, Jason Tatum went to the Eastern Conference Finals as a rookie and was one bad shooting quarter away from the NBA Finals. So he comes back in his second season and thinks he's king shit. It's hard for him to take a step back and be like, now I got to defer to Kyrie and defer to, like, that was always going to be hard, but there's still I guess when I say they don't have the full experience of the different dynamics of being on different teams. They don't have the breadth of being on a good team, on a bad team. Like, Kyrie was on a bad team and
okay.
Being on a good team. Like, they just,
okay.
Go ahead.
But if we're going to go with that, Kyrie doesn't have the experience of being the best player on a title contender
either. No, he doesn't. Absolutely.
And I don't think he's handled that well all year. And I wonder too, how much of that is on Brad? And these are the blame game. I hate the blame game because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors. We don't know the message Brad is sending. We don't know the message Kyrie is sending behind closed doors. We don't know anything that's going on behind closed doors. And Brad, everything with Brad is going to go behind closed doors. He's just not a guy who's going to come out and publicly criticize a player. He will never do that. He'll criticize his team sometimes, but I've literally, in how many years have I covered his teams now? 5 or 6? Is that how long he's been coaching?
Something like that, yeah.
I haven't heard him one time single out a player for criticism. And I think that's a great strength.
Sure.
I think a lot of the time that's great, but it also makes it really tough for us to know exactly what's going on and who deserves the blame. So Kyrie calls out the young guys, and I do think that caused a bit of a divide.
Sure. And look, I don't want to call this the blame game. It sounds like blame, and it might feel like blame, but explaining something and saying that there's responsibility is not, like, blame feels so negative. Like, just to say that explaining that certain guys are having trouble with certain dynamics, it's not blaming them, like, it's your fault. Like, this is just what it is. And Kyrie definitely is having trouble with this as a leader. He said it. He's admitted that too. This is his first time doing this, and he, what, like, when all of this went down and when he was doing the apology to LeBron, like, that was, in my view, his kind of admission, like, okay, I didn't get this right, and now I understand. Same way I was just saying, he doesn't have the experience. Like, once you go through it, you say, oh, okay, I get it now. Now I got to go apologize to LeBron because I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. Just like anything. Just like if I was doing this podcast and I had to apologize, I'd like, oh, man, I got this. And it's harder than I thought. I got to go to apologize to the person who whatever and say, like, I screwed up. I didn't realize how hard this was going to be. Like, that's just part of life. It's part of growing up and it's part of growing into a role. So back to the Brad thing and the extent of which, you know, Brad's responsibility. His handling of like Kyrie, I don't know, like we don't know how he is in the locker room, and I don't know who he talks to, how he talks to guys. Like that part is, like you said, a very difficult element to kind of flesh out. We can get into his substitutions. We can get into his use of timeouts, which I asked about after the game, and he was like, "Yeah, maybe," but I don't know. Let's take a break. And then come back, and we'll get into the Brad thing, and then we'll figure out how we kind of connect everything as best we can. We'll be right back on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So we started out talking about Brad. There's so many tentacles to all of this, and people want to say, point a finger and be like, this is the reason. And there's no one thing. Like, I talk a lot about the young guys. And I think if we're putting a percentage on where a lot of this stems from, I would say the greatest number percentage-wise is next to the column of young guys. Now, that might be 20%, and everything else is less than 20% of that, but I still think that's like the biggest chunk. I'm not saying that's half the reason or 90% of the reason. It's probably not the biggest. It's probably not a huge, huge, huge reason, but it's the biggest of all the reasons, if that makes sense. Brad, let's continue that discussion. Because is there anything else that sticks out to you when we talk about Brad Stevens and how he should he be like more fiery? Should he be like, I know it's not his personality, but I'm just sitting here with the Kings Phoenix game, and the Kings are blowing a little bit of a lead, or were before we started recording the podcast, and Dave Joerger calls a timeout and he starts lighting into his team on the bench. Brad Stevens doesn't seem like he's one to do that. Should he be a little bit more kind of demonstrative? Is that a thing that he needs to be doing?
Well, he can light guys up sometimes. I think, to me, like, Brad has never had to deal with all the dynamics we've spent this entire podcast discussing.
That's a great point.
I think one of Brad's greatest strengths is that he's really good at communicating with people. And really good at staying positive with people, and really good at learning. Like, he's one of the, like, very, very good at learning things. And I think, like, his first couple of years, one of the knocks on him that you'd hear from scouts and stuff was that he didn't know how to handle, like, a rolling big man. They had Brandon Wright for a few games. It was just a few games. And someone texted me, like, Brad has no idea how to use Brandon Wright. And it's a tiny thing at the time, but now, you know, they're freeing Daniel Tice for lobs, and they're freeing Al Horford for lobs. And he learned that. So he's a very quick learner. He's never had to deal with these dynamics from an all-star coming back to, and a lot of coaches never had to deal with these dynamics because the Celtics dynamics are very rare. A lot of their dynamics are very rare. Two all-stars coming back from injury. A slew of young players who have to take smaller roles because of those all-stars coming back. And those guys made it to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals by themselves.
Like, right.
It really is a crazy group of dynamics. And Brad has always in the NBA, and even dating back to Butler, although Butler, the year after they reached the finals again. And so they had some of that favorite status that year, but he's kind of always coach the plucky underdogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the plucky underdogs, with even when the Celtics with Isaiah Thomas finished with the first seed in the East, LeBron's team was the overwhelming favorite. And that's just how it was. And Isaiah, but when he got to Boston, he wasn't an all-star. He became an all-star. So every player that the Celtics relied on before Kyrie came over and before these set of circumstances happened, a lot of them were playing their best basketball in Boston. So there were never any of these issues where you had to ask a guy to do less, because it was like Evan Turner came over. He was expecting nothing. Well, now he's in a big role. Isaiah Thomas comes over. He's a sixth man. Well, now he's an all-star and he loves it. Jay Crowder came over. He was a small piece, became a key piece to a playoff team. There are no problems there. And so this is a whole new set of issues for Brad to deal with. And I wonder how much he has learned this season from everything. And I think, honestly, moving forward, this will be a huge, huge learning experience to him. And I'm sure he'll grow from it exponentially. But I think for him and for obviously everyone else, this has been tough to navigate with everything.
So we've been talking for about 35 minutes. There's one running theme throughout all of the things that we've been talking about, and it's inexperience. It's inexperience with the young guys. It's inexperience with Kyrie as a leader. It's inexperience with Brad Stevens as a coach, and different varying degrees. I would say most of the Celtics problems can be connected to some level of inexperience, whether it's the young guys who don't know how to handle certain things and don't have 10 years under their belts to say, okay, the winning is important in this, and however they handle themselves. There's a lot of it that can be connected to Kyrie Irving as a leader who doesn't know or didn't know or is still learning how to navigate, like you said, the experience of leading these kinds of players and leading a locker room, such a diverse locker room, and you know, young guys and strong personalities like Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart and keeping all of those guys together and trying to figure out how to do it the right way. And then Brad Stevens walking into this season, having never coached a team with this level of expectation. And like you laid out, all of the rare circumstances that this team had. Inexperience has plagued these Celtics for this entire season in one way or another. So I guess now the question is, have they gained enough experience through this season? Are they gaining enough experience through this season as they move forward with, what, 26 games left plus playoffs, however deep they get in the playoffs? Can they get in over the next 26? I shouldn't even have said plus playoffs. 26 games. Can they figure it out? Can they put together enough to figure out when the playoffs roll around how to become a dangerous team and play together and play like they played against the Warriors for 16 straight games or whatever it is in the playoffs that they play?
I have three thoughts. One, they're fine. Like, they've been fine for a while. They've played good basketball for a while. No matter whether they're having fun or not, they've played really good basketball. They're overreacting to two losses, or reacting to two losses. I don't know whether it's an overreaction because I don't know what's going on in the locker room. Obviously, Marcus Morris has been fed up with some of the dynamics. Two, fine's not going to be enough in the East. Mm-hmm. The Celtics are going to have to be playing together and playing at the highest level because the Raptors, the Sixers, and the Bucks are coming for that ass. They're all coming for that ass. And so they're going to have to be great. Fine isn't going to be enough. Third thought, the playoffs tend to help matters. I remember I was talking to actually Scal. Scal brought up a really an enlightening point to me. He said he was always nervous during regular season games. I don't know whether nervous was the UFC word, the word he used. But he was nervous during regular season games because he always wanted to play better for himself and to earn more minutes and to get a bigger contract, whatever the case may be. He always wanted to play well individually during the regular season. He said during the playoffs, that totally went away. He didn't give a shit about himself. He didn't give a damn what he did. It was all about the team. And I think a lot of guys are probably like that. And You know, you once the playoffs come, I do think there's a shift in mentality that it goes from, okay, I want to get my own points, I want to have my own opportunities, to every game matters so much, I don't have time to think or worry about any of that stuff. And I don't know how much just the playoffs arriving will wipe away all the issues the Celtics are facing and have faced, but I do think that will help guys, to whatever extent it may be able to just shove aside everything else and just kind of focus on playing team basketball.
I agree. I agree with all of those points, Jay. And I think the point about the playoffs is something that that's I think a point that needs to be made and needs to be repeated. It's something that has kind of been thrown around a lot, and we've mentioned it before in the podcast. And I'll read a quote from Doc Rivers before the game last night, where he talked about this team, this Celtics team that he sees, and the comparison to the 08 championship team. He talked about all the sacrifice and all that stuff, but this line sums up, I think, what you said. It's all about winning, and when that becomes the major focus, it works out. When the playoffs start, it happens more because it's winning time in the playoffs. And then he said about this Celtics team, says, I look at them, I think they're in a fine place. So I agree that when all of the bullshit is stripped away and it gets to a point where, okay, now it's time to really play, then this team can be really good. And I think this season has shown us that they have played like crap. Like, earlier in the season, they lost to bad teams because they just weren't there against bad teams. And I think it goes to the mentality of, I can go play my game and do whatever I'm doing selfishly against these bad teams, because they're bad teams, it doesn't matter, we can still win. And that's why it was said that these guys want to win, but they want to win on their own terms. I forget who said that, but somebody said that, and I thought it was a good point. And that's why when they blow 25-point leads in these games, it's because, hey, we've done the team thing, we've built this huge lead up, now I get to go do my thing and be my selfish self and get my numbers, and then we'll still be fine. And then they end up blowing the lead, because when you give a team life in the NBA, they're too good, regardless of their record, they're too good.
Landry Shamet.
Look, Landry Shamet's good. I mean, he's a good shooter.
Got the ratchet.
Man, that kid can shoot. So to add to your point, I think we've seen them play great against the Warriors. We've seen them play great against, they've beaten the Raptors, they've beaten the Bucks. They've beaten teams that are ahead of them. They've beaten teams that they need to beat. We've seen them play well against good teams. Now, is it enough? I don't know. Will something jump up to bite them in the ass in the playoffs? Maybe. But there are still enough encouraging signs. This still is going to be a 50-win team, which is wild considering how bad it's felt. Like, this is going to be the most disappointing 50-win team ever in NBA history here. But it's still going to be a 50-win team. And they're still going
to... Did the 2010 Celtics win 50 games? They must have, right?
They must have. I don't remember.
Because that was disappointing.
That was
a disappointing season.
Yeah, but, I mean, they...
But they'd already done it before. They'd already had their title,
and they went to the finals. I mean, they lost the finals in a disappointing manner, but this is a different level of disappointment.
But their regular season was disgusting.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
like they didn't give a damn.
They did not care. That was a completely different animal there. They just didn't care. Just like, just get us to the playoffs. It didn't matter at all. But
yeah.
So we'll see. There is a lot of hand wringing over these two losses, because they're such disgusting losses, Jay. I mean, you don't lose these games. You're not supposed to lose these games.
And especially these games matter. And these games matter.
Sure.
These games matter in the playoff race.
After the
Celtics
trade
are fifth right now.
Yeah. That's not like you could go on the road to start every one of these playoff series, which would be great for my hotel points, but bad for the Celtics. So
yeah. And if you got to beat Toronto and Philly on the road, or
that's tough.
Toronto and Milwaukee, or Philly and Milwaukee, like, Okay. That's a tough path.
It's a tough path. So, I mean, yeah, those matter. And then having LeBron come in and losing to LeBron and all of that, it's just there are reasons why these losses hurt. But look, they go out there and beat Philly, and that changes the feeling again. Like, if they go out there against Philly with their trade and Tobias Harris and all that stuff, and the Celtics still win, then the entire tone changes after that game, where it's like, wow, look at them. They can step it up against the good teams. So who knows? But I think we made good progress here. I think we've laid out a lot, and I feel good about some of the things, the points that we've made.
We've got it all mapped out.
We did. We fixed them.
Maybe the Celtics don't, but we have fun.
We did. Man, I've been having fun for a minute.
We have a lot of fun, man. It's just fun, fun, fun.
That's it. You know, all the chemistry is good here, man. boy, maybe Marcus Morris wants to join us. That'd be great.
Oh, he would be a hell of a podcaster.
Oh my God. He would be the best podcaster.
He would break the record for most times saying shit on a podcast.
Oh, every time. Oh, man, we got to get him on the podcast. I don't know how that's going to even be possible, but I'd love to make that happen. All right. While we try to figure that out, you guys enjoy the rest of your day, wherever it is that you're going. We hope you have enjoyed this show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for giving us that 5-star rating. Thanks for giving us a good review. If you haven't, please do so. It really does help. All of you new listeners, what's up? Thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Spread the word. Tell your friends. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked On Celtics.